If you got my plate out or not?
No, we'll get it out.
This is a good thing.
Is that all seen? I couldn't tell.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Thanksgiving.
Very good.
I thought you guys had to go.
So, yeah.
And I had all my children home.
Oh, that's
good morning, everyone. The joint meeting of the Committee on Education and the House E-12 Education Committee is called to order. It is December 1st, just after 10 a.m. We're meeting in room 15 of the Capitol. Congratulations to all the returning House members. And at this point, I'd like us to each introduce ourselves, state your name and the district you represent. And we'll start with Representative Ward.
Representative John Ward, representing District 12A up in Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Arrington, Nisswa area. And it's nice to be back. Thank you.
Representative Larry Haas, representing District 14B.
My microphone doesn't like to stay up, but I represent the central part of central Stearns County, including the districts of St. Cloud, Ricori, Kimball, Painesville, Eden Valley, Watkins, a little bit of Holdingford. I think that's most of them. Avon and Albany.
Hi, I'm Linda Slocum. I represent District 63B. I represent East Richfield, East and Central Bloomington.
And Representative Bob Detmer, representing Northern Washington County, Eastern and Eastern Anoka County.
I'm Sandra Erickson. I won't be returning, but I won't lose track of all of you. I represent East Central Minnesota.
Good morning. I'm Denise Dietrich. I represent House District 47A, which is... Champlin and Coon Rapids. Thank you.
Carlos Mariani, 65B, which is right here. Capital's in my district, and I chair the House E-12 committee.
We'll go down to Senator Saltzman.
Hi, I'm Kathy Saltzman. I represent Central Washington County, South Washington County, Stillwater, North St. Paul, Oakdale, Maplewood, and parts of Montemite School District.
I'm Jen Olson, Senate District 33, Western Hennepin County, 20 cities and about 8 or 9 school districts.
I'm Ann Lynch. I represent the Rochester area and have 5 school districts in my district.
I'm Terry Bonoff, and I represent Wayzata, Hopkins, Minnetonka, Robbinsdale, a little bit of Osseo School District.
Rick Olson, Senate District 17, which is Chisago, most of Isanti, and part of Anoka County. All are part of 10 school districts.
Sandy Rummel, representing Moundsview, Centennial, and White Bear Lake school districts.
I'm Chelsea Magadance. I'm Senator Wieger's legislative assistant.
Gretchen Toussaint, Committee on Education.
Okay, well, the state is well represented here at the table, and thanks to each of you for being here. The primary reason for the meeting today is because of the grad test. And as you know, the administrative law judge basically ruled on the request for the hearing for different changes. And before us now, in April, approximately April 14 and 15, there will be about 65,000 11th graders taking that test. And in fact, I think there's a sampler in there if anyone wants to take a look at it. This is where rigor hits reality, because the high stakes are in place. You don't pass, you don't graduate. And that's the Minnesota legislature, by the way, that said that. And the requirement to take it in 11th grade was in 2005 statute. The commissioner is implementing what we said, and we'll hear from them. But what gets a lot of the concern that has been raised is, based on the results last year by students that are now in 12th grade on similar type questions, perhaps 33-34% might pass. That means 21,300 or so, or potentially 43,700 11th graders, your constituents and mine, on a track saying you could fail. Maybe it's going to be a higher pass rate. Couple of reasons. We're told that it may not have been taken as seriously last year because there were the high stakes weren't there. So experts say maybe 8 to 18% increase in that score. And if that does happen, wonderful, but we're still looking at 33,000 11th graders. And if they take the test in mid-April and the district isn't notified until June, and the first opportunity for a retake is the first week of July or so, there's a lot of potential for concern. And then the reality of, is a person likely to remediate? But we'll see. The experts from the department are here, and then we're going to hear from various stakeholders. Also, one citizen had called from Plymouth, June Key, and we'll have you testify as well. But that's the overview for the meeting, and we have a lot of different suggestions, and we want to make sure as we address this during the session that we bring a lot of the various stakeholders together, because the consequences are obviously significant. So we'll go to the testimony, but Representative Mariani, who chairs the policy committee in the House, we're again very pleased to have another joint meeting together, and if you'd like to share some introductory comments.
Well, thank you, Senator. The chairman did, I think, a terrific job of framing the issue for us today. By the way, we were joined by two more members, Senator Torres Ray and Representative Carolyn Lane. So welcome. The chairman did a really good job, I think, of framing kind of the broad issues and the sense of urgency that we all have about state policy in terms of how it'll be implemented and how it'll be how it will impact a class, upcoming class of potential high school graduates. You all know that we're in an era where we are increasingly competing for the best and fullest development of every single individual that comes through our K-12 system. Our economic system really requires nothing less than that. And so the stakes are indeed quite high, Senator, in terms of if a high school graduation is, in fact, the passport into successful participation in our economy, then this is a very important point for us to be able to stop and look at what we're doing and find a way to maintain our high standards, but at the same time be able to ensure that every individual that moves through our system that makes strong efforts, in fact, can participate successfully in our society. So today we're going to be doing just sort of a kind of a lot of basic 101s, I suspect. We'll be learning about what the grad test is. We'll be trying to understand the relationship of the grad test to school accountability versus student accountability. We want to hear about the challenges that Minnesota students currently are facing in regards to this test. We want to hear about potential remediation efforts for those who may struggle with the test. We want to hear about equity issues. We have EOL students, special ed students. We all know about the achievement gap with communities of color. And so we want to understand how this test in particular features into the lives of these students. We also want to be able to sort of make some good best guess about what might be the possible outcomes of the first waves of these tests in the coming year. And then we also finally want to hear about alternative possibilities that can either complement the test or that can serve to take us to a different way in which we can maintain high standards. And so so we have a lot of issues to cover today, and Senator, you've put together a good group of testifiers. I'm looking forward to the witnesses and to their testimony today.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and we also would like to welcome Representative Erdahl, and I believe Representative Peterson is approaching. So welcome. I'd mentioned there's a sampler of the graduation test we've referred to. It's online, as many things are for the department. I believe there's about 40 questions. We're not going to take it, but I suggest that you do some of those questions yourself, though. And the cut date, when they determine what will be a passing score. I believe that will be determined May 20 or so. So a lot of questions to be answered. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the 40 questions are the questions that are embedded for grad, and so the test is longer than that overall? Or is it the 40 questions the whole, and it's a sampling of that that's the grad?
See, Senator Olson, we're going to go to Dirk Mattson next, and we'll have him put this all in context.
Thank you.
And so, members, we'll proceed. We also, at the last part of the meeting, we're going to talk just some overviews on various accountability proposals, but the focus will be on the grad. So if Dr. Mattson and if the commissioner would like to be at your side, that would be at our invitation to you as well, if you would like, commissioner. And welcome to the committee. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Dirk Mattson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department. As Representative Mariani mentioned, my role is to essentially provide a 101 of this test, to give you an overview of what is in statute and what the Department has been building according to that statute. So I'd like to take, I'm going to walk through four slides on a handout. It's a single page, dated December 1, 2008, with the Department logo on them. So I'll again, my purpose is just to provide what the department has been building since 2005. So in an overview, this test, the GRAD test, and the MCA-2, and I'll talk more specifically in just a moment about how those two tests are different and how they are similar, but this assessment system, or this particular group of assessments, was designed to replace the basic skills test. This year's seniors are the last group of students that are required to pass the BST, or the basic skills test, to graduate. So once this year's group of students moves out, all remaining students under statute are required to pass either the MCA-2 or the GRAD. The BST, as you recall, was administered in eighth grade, both in reading and mathematics. It was a 40-point multiple choice test. Varied by subjects, but it was a multiple choice test. The writing test was given for the first time in grade 10. So when the system was redesigned to balance out the testing load, that 10th grade writing test was moved to grade 9. It is essentially the same test, same passing score, but under its current auspices of the GRAD, it was first administered to 9th graders in 2006-2007. Passing score, just as it was under the BST, is still a 3 out of 6 raw score points. So that test, as I say, was administered in 06-07, roughly with a passing percentage on the first administration of roughly about 92% for those ninth graders. The reading test then began this new set of assessments. The reading test was given in grade 10 and is designed to be given in grade 10 for both state and federal accountability. It is the MCA-2, and embedded within that test is this test we're calling the GRAD test. And I'll take you through exactly how that embedding works in just a moment. The passing score on the MCA-2 and what statute says now in a 2007 revision is students either are proficient according to their MCA-2 score, so they are either at a 1050 or higher, they meet the standard or exceed the standard in our achievement level descriptions, or on the GRAD test they get a scale score of 50. And again, I'll walk through that in just a moment, but I want to take you through an overview. The math test, I should go back and say the reading score was a set last year and finally determined after motivational data had been acquired. And that's a very important aspect and part of why we're having the conversation today, is so that we identify what the passing score is when students are taking it under motivated conditions. A very common and best practice in the industry to wait until students have taken it for stakes before the passing score is set. The challenge is, and there are alternative ways to do this, and I can address those if you like, but the challenge is that if you set that passing score before students are motivated to take it, you may pick a mark that is intolerable, all right, for either pragmatic or whatever reasons. The passing score for the math test that students will be taking this year has not yet been set, so that it has been set on the MCA-2 at 1150. That's proficient. That's proficient for No Child Left Behind. That is one of the ways that students can demonstrate that they have met their graduation requirement in math. However, that grad test has not yet been taken by students for stakes. We have certainly been embedding it. We have been trying out our test questions just as every state in the country does by embedding their test questions. So we have some ideas about performance. But because it has not yet been taken for student stakes, we don't have a very accurate picture of that yet. The next slide, the second slide there, talks about what this test is. It is a test aligned to the 2003 standard. So the MCA2 that started in the spring of 2006 is aligned to that mathematics academic standards that began in 2003. So these are the standards to which this test is aligned. It is not a new set of standards. The standards, if you're familiar with the revision cycle, the department and educators just completed in 07 a set of revised mathematics academic standards. This is not the test that is measuring those sets of standards. This is on the 2003 test, or 2003 standards. It was designed, the grad test was designed essentially at the same time that we designed the MCA2. And there were a couple of requests that came from stakeholders, particularly from school districts, as we designed that. And we're probably all familiar with some of these requests. One is to reduce the administration time for testing. So instead of having students sit for an NCLB test and also sit for a graduation test, see if you can figure out a way to make it work as a single test or at least a single single administration. And then there was an additional concern that was brought forth about motivation for grade 11 students. Right now under our MCA2s, there is no set motivating factor by the state. It could be set by a local district, but there is no motivation within that accountability system. Such the fact that some stakeholders brought to us the concern that if it could be embedded, that the graduation was somehow embedded in this test, or at least a part of it, then we would satisfy that motivation desire. So those were two issues brought to us at the request of districts that we looked at in the design. And my predecessor, in part, played a large role in designing this. And the design, as currently is structured, we believe meets those two requests. The test is designed to be, even though it is, we are well aware that it is a test that's set to high, rigorous academic standards, it's designed to be a minimum competency exam given at the end of 11th grade. That is saying what's the minimum amount of knowledge that a student must know at the end of 11th grade. We do not test in mathematics in grade 9 or grade 10, so essentially this is like a three-year test. It's a test given at the end of, the last test given was in 8th grade, and this is a three-year test given at the end of 11th grade. It does not, which is a common misconception, include Algebra 2 items. Those are part of the next set of standards. This is a test that is based on the 2003 set of standards. We developed this test in conjunction with teachers and had teacher meetings and posted publicly for on our website for comment the test specifications in 2006. And each year that we've administered the test, as we're required to do, we have posted our technical reports on our website. So into the weeds a bit on slide 3 on the backside of that page is essentially how this test works. All students are going to take this first test that is essentially they're sitting for two tests at the same time in either grade 10 for reading or grade 11 for mathematics, and they take that in the spring. So again, in 08, they took reading, and this spring they'll take mathematics. Students retaking the grad, if they are not proficient on either one of those two attempts right within that one sitting, will retake only the grad items, the items that have been identified for that. So let me try and walk you through this particular slide. There is an MCA2 score, which is based, that's the top row there, which is based on a total of 50 items. Half of those items are working both in the state graduation test and in, if you will, the federal accountability test. So those items we refer to as common. They're common between the two items. There's another 25 items that have been designated only to count for the MCA2. So on this MCA2, half of the items are working for two masters, if you will. There is another set of items, 15 essential items on the far left, that are only for the graduation test. So they have no bearing on the system accountability for the district. They're only for student stakes. And again, those items and what they're aligned to were developed with Minnesota teachers when that test was designed. So you see on the top row, the MCA2 is based on 50 total items. There's more points than that because some items have more points, but 50 total questions. And on the bottom row, it identifies that there are 40 questions, and those are all multiple choice items, the 15 and the 25 common items. There is, on the far right, embedded field test questions, and that is how we prepare test questions and check them out. We're basically testing the test question to see if it yields appropriate knowledge and skills demonstrated by the student. We're testing those questions. So they're field tested. They don't count for student scores, but they are necessary and, again, a very, very common practice to embed those questions into the test. The alternative to that is to have standalone field tests where you basically say to students, okay, we need to have some data on these questions. Please sit down and take an additional administration. So the most inobtrusive way to do that is to embed field test questions. And so those are the questions that make up the 65 items on that test.
Sam Mariano.
I'm sorry, 85. I beg your pardon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. morning, Mr. Mattson. Two quick questions. So you know, help me put this in terms of like of a big context. If, so 50 items. Is that industry standard? Is that, I mean, you know, so it's, this is a test that in the math part, you know, had, you know, it's a 3-year test and it boils down to 50 questions. Intuitively that feels, so tell me about, you know, how that, the effectiveness, the efficacy of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, you're correct. It is a bit of a decision of made of how much information one wants to gather. As the deeper you go in getting information on a particular benchmark, the more information you have to, the more questions you have to ask about that particular benchmark. But we do believe, for the purposes of being accurate and appropriately categorizing students, as far as 50 questions go, or the points that make up those items. That it is a good representation of where that student is on this continuum of knowledge and skills. If we want to be able to tell students when they take this test how good they were on benchmark 4B7, we would have to ask a number of questions on 4B7, whatever that might be. We don't necessarily do that. We sample those questions and that content to come up with a mathematics score, and we do report down to the strand level and give that information. So we certainly could ask more questions. It becomes a compromise between the amount of testing time and how much more information are you going to get after those 50 questions.
Well, and perhaps, Mr. Chair, we're not at anywhere near the point about talking about alternatives. I'm not arguing for them at this point, but it seems to me an alternative scenario might be one where, in fact, you do more periodic testing over time as opposed to waiting 3 or 4 years, which then allows you to do much more depth of content knowledge. But, you know, we'll get to that at some point. My second question has to do with those essential items, 15. So the second row there, did you say those are not for school accountability measures?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, that's correct. Those 15 items only count for the student's grad score. So it essentially is another opportunity for the student to demonstrate additional knowledge and skills on benchmarks that may not be at the grade 11 level.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just to continue on, and I will just make a quick comment to Representative Mariani's note that he's correct. There are probably a myriad options for doing this. There are several states, and again, there are trends in testing, just like there are trends in everywhere. And the trend appears to be going within the country. At least there's a lot of conversation about end-of-course testing, which is certainly much more specific to algebra, et cetera. Just before going to the last slide about establishing a passing score, I know that you have printed out for you the rulemaking that was permitted by the legislature to deal with students in special circumstances. The rulemaking authority that the legislature granted the commissioner deals in no way with what the passing score should be. Should there be a graduation test? Should we allow for another test to take the place of the graduation test? It was very specific parameters on that, and that dealt specifically with students who are in unique circumstances. So, for example, students who are on individual education plans, IEPs, students who are ELL, English language learners, students who transfer in from another state and they've already passed their graduation test and they're in their last semester senior. So it's students like those that we have had either have existed, and in the BST, those rules already existed, and they were simply brought forward. In fact, for the grad, the EOL exemption, which gave students an exemption if they were in grade 10 or above, was actually expanded to a four-year exemption instead of a three-year exemption. So what was in the BST was brought forward, and then we looked at circumstances that we regularly ran into, which were that case of my dad just transferred here, and I'm 2 weeks out from graduation. I passed all my tests in California. What can I do? So that was the rulemaking that was established, was those students in special circumstances. The final slide that I have for you there is establishing a passing score. And again, there are doing this is different than it is done perhaps in your classroom if you were a teacher, where it is just, I'm going to declare it's 90, 80, 70, 60, and that's what it shall be. In large-scale assessment, there is essentially a balance between the content that's required of students and the passing rate that is expected of students. So it's really a balance between content and policy. And what happens in that is a set of stakeholders get together who are Minnesota teachers, and this happened for the setting of all the tests we've done in this new set of tests and is scheduled to be established for the mathematics test. Content experts are brought together. They review the test questions. They review the actual questions that were on that particular assessment that students had to pass. And they are asked to make judgments about those questions and their expectations and the knowledge and skills that students have to demonstrate. We would love for students to get every question right. We all realize that is not going to happen on any particular day. And so they make a decision, a content decision, about how much is good enough. How much on this assessment is it? Is it 20 questions out of the 65? Is it two questions? And which questions? Not just how many of them, but which questions? So they aren't just all in percentages or number sense or something like that. How we do this at the department has been an established protocol that we establish an agenda, an articulated agenda that says exactly what the activity is going to be going to entail. And for this type of standard setting where we're only picking one cut score, it usually is one day in length. We have on retainer, just as every state in the nation does, national testing experts who come in to advise the department about their testing program, to provide technical assistance about that. And so these technical experts come in and review that standard setting agenda, and they give advice to our testing contractor, to the department, about what adjustments should be made so that the process is correct. They're not giving advice about where the cut score should be set, but they look at, is the process accurate and appropriate according to the best standards, best practices in large-scale assessment. They review that, and the activity takes place after students have taken this under motivated conditions. As I mentioned, these stakeholders, these Minnesota teachers that represent across the state in ethnicity and experience in student populations that they teach, come together to review the content material and the data. This standard setting activity it's an open meeting. It is also reviewed or observed, I should say, by a member of our technical advisory committee, who reviews that, and then they report back to, I jumped ahead. They review that standard setting workshop. And again, I'm describing a process that happens in every state that sets standards in a general sense. The stakeholders make a recommendation of the cut score to the commissioner. And in Minnesota, the commissioner then takes that information and reviews that recommendation. I should also add, I failed to do so, that not only content experts are brought in, they make a recommendation on where the cut score is, but then we also look at the data and find out, okay, if the cut score is at score X, what will that mean for passing students and non-passing students today on this year's administration? And we bring in stakeholder experts. We bring in representatives from the superintendents and principals organizations, business community, etc. And at that point, then, that recommendation is made to the commissioner. The commissioner reviews that again with the National Technical Advisory Committee and will ask questions of those individuals, again, to ask, was the process followed correctly? Was there anything that is giving me a recommendation that is other than what should be expected in the best practices in setting a cut score? She has that conversation with them, of course, with consultation with department staff, And also, I know in the reading cut score that some members of the legislature attended that meeting as well. Once that's done, it goes back to the commissioner to take under advisement, and then at the end of that process, the commissioner uses her administrative authority to set the cut score. And that, again, the process I've described in general is how it's taken place on the MCA2s, on the grad test, on any test that we've had to set a cut score or some kind of mark in recent memory, whether it be meets the standard, does not meet the standard, et cetera. And with that, that's my overview of what this test is and the design of the test and where we are going according to statute and design.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Dr. Matson?
Yes, ma'am.
They never put down your doctor, and I just want, every now and then we have to acknowledge the credentials that our State Department has and appreciate them. I have two questions, if that's all right. The first one is after the students take the test, is it going to be March, April? How soon will they have the results?
Sure. Dr. Matson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, the test will be taken on, for the bulk of the state who are in session during these days, the test will be taken on April 14th and 15th. Our desire is to get both the MCA score back and the grad test score back as soon as possible. The MCA has open constructed responses where students explain their answer, and this is always what takes us majority of the time in scoring. So our desire is to pull both of those together and provide the results. I believe our schedule right now says on June 5 is about as quickly as we can turn that around. So districts will have electronic knowledge by student of who's passed and who has not, but either on the MCA or on the grad. So June 5 is when we expect to have results back in the hands of districts. Still not as fast as I would like to do it, but about as fast as we right now can do within schedule.
Thank you.
Sarah?
That helps. I do know there is concern on the part of the districts for staffing up or staffing down, whatever they might need to prepare students to retake the test. My second question has to deal with how many times is it possible for a student to retake the test?
Dr. Matson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, the grad test we have set up in a computer. So if you are not successful in the paper administration in April on either the MCA2 or the grad that's embedded in it, as is shown on that third slide, then 40 questions become the grad retest. And that is delivered on computer, and it's delivered the first week of every month, all 12 months of the year. Now, I say that quickly, though, I have to add, you cannot take it, at least as we have currently defined the administration, and this is with consultation with stakeholders and our national experts as well. You cannot take it every month. You can take it a maximum of every other month, and the rationale for that is to provide remediation. We will have the results back to you inside of 2 weeks. We are looking at doing it even faster than that, but again, it becomes we want to make absolutely sure we have that score right as this new system is rolled out. So they have roughly about 6 weeks for remediation. Our as I've said in other presentations to principals and so on, we don't want to have this so it's just, I took it last month, I'm going to come back and try it again next month with only 2 weeks of remediation. We want to make sure that student has had time to look at the score report with teachers, identify what they need to remediate on, and then come back and take it at another time. They don't have to take it that 2 months later, though. They can take it any time. And so the purpose of every month is to provide flexibility. So if Johnny was out of town during the summer, they can come back in the next month, and they know it's going to be administered. It's just a governor on how frequently they can take it. The number of times they can take it is roughly, depending on when you start counting, between 7 to 8 times, which is equal to or exceeds the number of times that the basic skills test was offered. And we knew that that would be a concern for stakeholders, so we worked very hard to match that number.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Senator Rummel's question, then is it correct to assume that there are no open-ended questions that are part of the grad test? Those that are in the MCA that take longer to score? And if that, in fact, is the case, is it possible that the grad test part results could be processed more quickly and that feedback getting to the districts and individuals faster?
Dr. Matson.
Senator Rieger, Senator Olson, you're absolutely correct. We have looked at scoring that more quickly. It is also a balance of policy and actually what can, it's potentially possible, although perhaps not very frequent, where a student will not pass the grad but pass the MCA too. So they may do very well on those constructed response questions, and indeed we had some students do this during reading. We expect we may even have a higher number in mathematics, not very high, but a higher number than what we had in reading. And typically my content experts will say it's going to be those kids that are in calculus that are going to breeze through a couple of those grad items and miss it. Now, again, it's conjecture at this point, and we'd have to map back to students, et cetera. So certainly something we've looked at. Our desire is to be able to give you the full answer when you get your results on June 5th is the reason for our current schedule.
Sarah Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Mattson, you know, just a comment. I have four children, the youngest of whom is a senior this year, so I've been going through this stage of life for many, many years. And I know that it is the most stressful time in a young person's life is this decision about, you know, where they're going to go to school, how they're doing. They have to take the hardest classes. And so just a comment that I think that we are putting such an undue burden by placing it at this late. I mean, I can't even imagine finding out in June when you've got a whole summer planned out and you're looking to take college trips and figuring out kind of where you stack up in the world of competition, that now you've got this, oh my gosh, are you going to graduate? And so you didn't do that to us. You are our expert, but I'm just have to use the occasion to comment that I don't think it's a very well founded timeline. And so, you know, I don't know if you can address that.
Senator Rico, Senator Rummel, you're right. It is
Senator
very. I beg your pardon, Senator Bonoff. It is a very compressed timeline, and we knew that kind of going into it. We are. Minnesota is probably. I guess I haven't done any recent look back since we've been building the test. We were when we had the BST. We were probably the last state to have a graduation test at a middle school or junior high level. Of states that have graduation tests. And now we're kind of on the other end of the continuum. We are probably, there are other states that have grade 11 graduation requirements. I'd hesitate to say how many that is of the 23 that currently have graduation requirements. But my hunch is it's not the majority. So.
We're going to hear soon from the commissioner, but Senator Rummel, no. Did you have a?
I thought it was Senator Saltzman.
Senator Saltzman?
Yes, just a couple questions, Mr. Chair, very briefly. Where do we sit with other states? Is there a way for us to know, Dr. Mattson, if this test is going to be equivalent to standard step by other states? Or is because we have this dilemma before us, and I think that, you know, Senator Wieger said, in rigor hits reality, is really true here. Do we have any way of knowing that are we asking too much of our students compared to other states? That, I guess, is my first question.
Dr. Mattson.
Senator Rieger. Senator, we have not done necessarily any comparisons against other states to find out where we are. Of course, our test is measuring the state's academic standards. So we have our first requirement is that we align to those sets of standards. And as each state sets those, that would be a little challenging, at least with the work that we have done thus far. Certainly there are others that have done some work, and we would like to do it ourselves, of matching up to where we are against either other nationally normed tests and so forth. However, one needs to remember that those are norm sets of tests. They are not. We have a criterion reference test. The criterion was this is the amount of, or this is the mathematics that 11th graders should know, and we developed the test aligned to that, not necessarily, and this number of students will pass. It was first set on that set of standards. There are other states that are doing, that have other, and that would be also very challenging, too, because other states may have, some states have alternative pathways to graduation, and so when you're measuring apples and apples from one state to another, some of those students who may have chosen not to take that exam are now on that alternative pathway, so you don't really have that comparison necessarily back to how our test is doing against their performance on their test. So work that could be done on some nationally normed tests, but I think that becomes a a policy decision of have we set the standard too high.
Okay. Just one more question, Mr. Chair.
Mayor Saltzman.
And Dr. Mattson, I know that when we get these results back in June that there could be a flurry of, you know, activity, but is there any way for school districts to know in which particular areas a student really needed additional assistance? Because when you think about this test is going to be really covering years of math to then do remedial work and just sort of, you know, where do we even start? Is there a specific concept that the student needs? Is there anything in this contract with our test that is going to provide more specific information as to which questions were perhaps missed so that they could target some of their remedial work in these areas?
Dr. Matthews.
Senator Wieger, Senator Saltzman, right now they get the districts do get back results on the MCA-2 that provide information down to the strand level and certainly at the student level as to what strands are weak. But, of course, those are students who are moving on. Mm-hmm. So it isn't particular to that student. I would hope that districts, although I recognize being from one, the challenges that this entails, but one would hope the districts are doing that kind of preparation on their curriculum and the MCA2s as well already of where is our curriculum in its alignment to the state standards and how are our students doing. You know, as I've often said, these are essentially the state's final exams. But they don't provide the interim information that districts are going to need to make those kinds of adjustments as the student's progressing toward that. So we will provide back as detailed a result as possible and even look at some new options for providing even more detailed results on these particular graduation exams. But there isn't anything forthcoming, and that's certainly a challenge within the current structure of the assessment system that you go from a state-level test at eighth grade till 11th grade, and there are 3 years there. And you know, I'm the last to suggest that people really think it's a good idea if I suggest more testing necessarily to find out that information. So there are other interim assessments that can be done to find out where students are in progression to that. But as far as where a particular child is in preparation for that end of course, that's left to this MCA2 grad. That's left at the district's discretion.
We're going to have to move along. Representative Erickson, I believe you had your hand up, but could we possibly hold? I'd like to get the commissioner's testimony and others, and then there will be an additional chance, but we're getting behind. Thank you very much, Dr. Mattson. If you'd please stay there. And, Commissioner, your body language indicates that you agree with the comments, and we appreciate the information that's been forwarded. But if you'd like to provide some additional insights on the challenges that you're facing with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We appreciate the opportunity to kind of give you the background of how the grad was developed and how it is embedded in the MCA2. Some of the things that I think you need to think about as you're making, some really very complex decisions, because if you make one decision, it affects, something, and it's going to be a complex decision for you all to make. The things that we're facing here at the Department of Education, however, are more long-term. And I think that as you're making those short-term decisions and weighing all of the impact of whatever you do with the couple of years of students that this will impact, you also need to think about where do we want to go for an assessment system in the state of Minnesota that can give us information over time about how well our students are doing. How are they? Are they prepared for college and work? And are they prepared for this 21st century global economy that they're going to be competing in for jobs? So we need to have some kind of an assessment system going forward that is common sense, that's fair for the student, fair for the district, so that they're getting instructional information back, so that they can realign or adjust their curriculum as it needs to be adjusted to meet our new MCA3 standards that we are now in process of developing. And that's what I want to raise a little bit of an alarm with you. We are probably 6 months behind, not because we are lazy or we don't have the people working hard to do it, but we have kind of slowed down what we are doing because we are not sure where the legislature wants to go with our future assessment system. There are a lot of different issues. Right now, we're following the legislative direction that all math tests that are developed for high school take place in the 11th grade, and all math tests have an embedded grad. And so we have been proceeding forward to develop our MCA 3 11th grade math test with the grad embedded into it. And, of course, because we have new standards, we have to adjust our grad appropriately to those new standards, too, which, as Dr. Mattson said, will reflect the Algebra 2 requirement. So you have some decisions. If we are uncomfortable now that the 11th grade test is too late for our students to remediate them, then you have some decisions. Do you want to put that test down into 10th grade? Remember, we still have to have some kind of an NCLB test for our federal NCLB requirements. So we have to have that cognizant in front of us at all times, too. Do you, and I think Representative Mariani mentioned, is an 11th grade test that incorporates a lot of subject matter that maybe has happened since 8th grade, 9th, 10th, and now 11th grade to remember that matter for 3 years and then have it tested? Is that a fair thing for us to be doing? I think Senator Saltzman mentioned, you know, what are other states doing as far as assessment systems, and many have. You know, everybody's familiar with the New York Regents test. Massachusetts is very well known for its end-of-course examinations, and they have examinations in all subject areas that their students have to pass. But what we could do, and Representative Mariani alluded to it, is that perhaps you move to some kind of an end-of-course test. That's where the student will, you know, be taking the subject matter and then at the end of the course have that exam. And that would be certainly a fair way of measuring what students are doing. And if indeed you wanted to measure their progress over time, you might want a 9th grade, a 10th grade, and then an 11th grade test. But if you want to do that, you need to make that decision in February. Because if not, we are not going to have enough time to readjust and completely change all the things that we are doing. So we've got, we all have some serious decisions to make, and we need to do them thoughtfully and have that discussion, because we have no preconceived plan or idea of what we should do for our students. But my bottom line is that we need to make sure that we do have an assessment system that is common sense, that's instructionally helpful for the teachers and the system and the students. We need to make sure that they are prepared well for this 21st century demands that they're going to be facing. We can't step backwards and go back to lower standards at this point, but we also have to recognize that we have kids that are struggling, and how are we going to help them, you know, meet at least a minimum bar? And that's why we did develop the grad. So you have a balance of things that you need to think about. But I would plead with you that as you're looking at the short-term solution right now, that you really think very thoughtfully about your long-term solution. And whatever you do, I would hope that those principles will be part of your decision, that we have all kids meeting or expecting to meet a relatively high bar so that they will be successful.
Senator Olson, followed by Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I've been reflecting on this and the difficulty of the timing of the test in relation to the courses taken. And it brings back some memories, and maybe I'm the only one that functions this way, but I suspect I'm not, is that oftentimes you learn things, but if you don't use them, you lose them. And that's where I think when we have things greatly compartmentalized, like in mathematics, some of that math, we are the basic stuff we're using along the way. But other areas, and I think of the algebra, the geometry, if you aren't continuing to use them, they may not be retained long enough to pass that test in 11th grade. And I think the challenge is if I'm anxious to hear Dr. Peckel talk about this as well in terms of college readiness. If the demand and the need is going to be there, maybe our greater challenge is how do we handle our learning, not our learning process, but the engagement and activities throughout our high school years to assure that when we get this, that we are using it in at least not a constant, but a continuous manner, so that you're actually using it and are able to perform then on the tests. Because I think that would be the hard part for me. I liked math and I took everything that it could, but there's some, if you're not using it, it doesn't stay with you forever.
Representative Erickson, then Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either Commissioner Segrin or Dr. Mattson, when you received feedback from the recent testing, to what extent did teachers talk about or tell you that they lacked skills to teach some of these problem-solving requirements in the MCA2s and the embedded grad piece? Is that raising some issue among us, or are you not yet hearing about some of those concerns from the teachers in the field?
Representative Erickson, my division at least has not had sit-down conversations with teachers. We certainly do. There is another division within the agency, school improvement, that does professional development opportunities. We know, I guess at least anecdotally, that students and through the data that's coming through on the test questions, that students are still having challenges with, in some cases, what one might consider at least fundamental high school skills. I have not done, nor has my staff done, any kind of analysis or conversation with teachers to be able to ask if that is due to, a need for increased professional development in certain areas.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner,
just a couple of comments. Representative Erickson, while we haven't done any direct conversations with teachers, we have provided teachers over the last couple of years a survey called the Survey of Enacted Curriculum, which has been very helpful for teachers. They actually take about a 90-minute survey online, which asks them a series of questions about the curriculum that they are using and how it is aligned to the MCA2 standards. And that gives them a very complete look at what they're teaching and also identifies where maybe they're missing some components of their teaching, particularly in math. And we are hoping that we can do that again with the MCA3s. One of the things, however, that we are doing with the MCA3s, and that is thanks to the legislature, we have created math and science academies, and we've got the math academy portion going up and running. The science portion will be up this summer. And we know that with the new MCA3s that the 5th, 6th, and 7th grade have changed quite a bit as far as the math content. And so we have been working on that all summer long and into the fall, and we'll be working all the way through throughout the year with math teachers and curriculum developers, et cetera, in looking at what that is going to look like for math students in those grade levels. And then we will also be expanding that to all the other grades as we continue our math academies next summer. But we feel like some of these things that are put in place are going to be very helpful as we, you know, move into the MCAs. And whatever the standards are, whatever we end up doing with assessment, as far as the teaching of our new standards, we hope that this will be very, very helpful in support of our teachers.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner or Dr. Mattson, when you explained the setting of the cut score, you said that, maybe I misunderstood, so I'm repeating this. You said that stakeholders provided input, and then experts came back and provided additional input, and then the cut score was set. Is that right?
Senator Rieger, Senator Rummel, thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. The experts came in to only identify, was the procedure that was done to arrive at that recommendation done appropriately? They did not make comment on, we think it's too high or too low or you're going to miss a bunch of kids. They only looked from a technical aspect at the documented procedure or the workshop agenda. Was it followed? Did you ask the right questions of the judges? Did they all understand their task and so forth? So they were looking strictly at procedural task, and did it follow accepted standards? The Minnesota teachers were the ones who actually made the recommendation the technical experts came behind and said, yes, we concur that they followed a procedure that is best practice in setting a standard. But they didn't make any comment about the actual cut score. They left that to the state.
But then you suggested that the information go to the commissioner and that the real test score, cut score, is set. It isn't necessarily the same as what the stakeholder said.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you're correct in that they make a recommendation. They are an advisory body. So they do make a recommendation of what the cut score should be. And, for example, in reading, there were dissenting views on that when those two bodies came together. Content had a particular recommendation, and the policy stakeholders, if you will, had another recommendation. Both of those recommendations were not based yet on motivated data. So it was only on estimated data, if you will. So, and then they bring that to the commissioner. The commissioner reviews with the technical advisors. Was the process followed correctly? Or they give her an overview and a report of that. And then administratively, the cut score is set, yes, after the school. But the data, the actual how kids will perform on that particular test, is provided to the stakeholders as they're making those content decisions. So it's not devoid of how will kids do if we set the score at 32 questions right. It's after they do that, we go back and crank out numbers and say, this is what it will look like. Are you okay with that?
And I believe decision day is May 20 or so.
Mr. Chair, the activity is scheduled for May 20th, but we know we have a lot of activities right after that, which is that technical advisory committee that comes in and the commissioner's activity after that. So May 20th and just plus 2 or 3 days is going to happen.
We'll be busy too. Okay. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, I know you want to move on. Commissioner, I'm just going to push you a little bit. So, you know, the 11th grade, you know, setting the math test in the 11th grade, I understand, you know, the statutory responsibility, legislative responsibility. Well, quite frankly, we're heavily guided by the department's direction on that issue. So given that we're hearing potential issues, but probably more importantly, and this is what I don't know, more importantly, given that we now have, although we don't have it yet with the 11th grade high stakes math, but we have some experience regarding students not arriving at that threshold level. We have some knowledge, I assume, in terms of whether or not there's enough time for remediation to occur, whether or not there's follow through with those kind of with remediation. Would the department at this point strongly urge the legislature to consider an alternative to the particularly the 11th grade math high stakes testing framework? You know, and this is not a gotcha thing at all. You know, we're going to be spending some feverish months in the months ahead, and we do have to make some pretty tough decisions about where we're going to focus our energies. If this is awfully important, then we need to gear up like right now to be able to move something potentially to the executive branch. Am I hearing a strong message from the department to really seriously roll up our sleeves with you on this issue to consider at least and vet through an alternative way to approach this issue?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, yes, I am encouraging you, based on the principles that I laid out, that we want to make sure that we are maintaining our focus on college and work-ready preparedness for all of our kids, and that we look at an assessment system that for the future that will allow us to measure our children's progress in high school. We can do it now, of course, in grade school and through middle school. We essentially have end-of-course tests, really, 3 through 8th grade with our MCA 2s right now. And what we're dealing with is really our high school, and we just have that one test in high school. And so we need to have some guidance from you fairly quickly, because we don't, and you don't either, want us spending a lot of money on a test that we end up, you know, that you think, well, in May we can make the decision, but we really needed to get it going now, because as Dr. Mattson said, you've got to develop field test questions that are embedded in whatever, and you've just got to develop a whole new test, and that has to be field tested. And so it takes, what, 2 or 3 years to
roughly
two quickly 2 years. But if you really wanted to do it well, probably more like three. But we'll do it quickly in 2 years, but we need to start that now. And so that's what we're really struggling with. We just want to give you that kind of that sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And we know this is a difficult, this is really coming at a very hard time when session's just starting in January. We just don't know what to do now. And we don't want to be spending a lot of money nor time on something that, you know, ultimately the legislature says, no, we don't want to do this that way. We'd like to. And there are many scenarios of things that you could do. You could move this down to the 10th grade, or you could say, let's do end of course. But all of those things have policy and cost implications that we would need to, you know, share with you and figure out, because we don't have all of that, those timelines all nailed down either.
That's why we're here, because of the sense of urgency. Yeah. We do accept that challenge. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, we appreciate your candor on this issue, so thank you very much for sharing with us. Senator Bonoff spoke very well about the logistics and the impact on students potentially finding this information out at the beginning of June leading up to their senior year. We haven't so much talked about the logistics for our school districts in terms of staffing. I'm envisioning that if I'm a student and I'm a senior, I'm calculating out the courses that I need to take so that I have the appropriate number of credits, and now it's my senior year, and oh my gosh, in fact, I almost need another class that's my remediation class so that I can pass this test. And the best example that I can think of, and actually it's kind of haunting me, is our eighth grade BST test. There's nothing more difficult when you are a school board member, and many of us at this table have sat in that position, and you have to field the call from the parent the week before graduation, indicating that that student isn't going to receive their diploma. This is because of the eighth grade BST test, that there have been any number of opportunities, years, literally, in some cases, of opportunities to meet that mark. So I think that the situation before us is quite grave, and there is a sense of urgency, and I would hope that Dr. Mattson mentioned alternative pathways. There's been reference that there are 23 other states that are doing something in this area. My regret at this point in time is that I wasn't sitting at this table in 2005, so I feel a little bit behind the ball on this one, but I do appreciate the candor of the department today.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. And thank you, Dr. Mattson. Commissioner, you'll be here for the balance of the meeting as well. There's one person that is not a paid staffer here that I'm aware of that's a volunteer, a parent. And I'd like to ask Jane Kay if she could approach next for the testimony, but to limit the testimony because of the time to 2 minutes. Welcome to the Joint Committee meeting. Please state your name, address for the record.
Jane Kay, and address too.
Community.
Community. I'm from Plymouth, Minnesota. I'm here today as a parent of a child who's at the Wayzata School District. And I'm also here for kids whose parents can't be here, kids that are in the inner city, kids that are in greater Minnesota, because I understand that my children are lucky to go to a very good school. My daughter has struggled with math since grade school. She has a math disability, but it's nothing that she does not have an IEP through the school. It is something that we have worked with. We have helped her all along. She's a junior in Wayzata, so she is looking at taking this grad standard test and maybe not passing it, and maybe not going to college, and I can't tell you how upsetting that is to me. She is a good student. She gets good grades in every class, but math, she doesn't get math. her group, too, what I've heard, this group that's graduating in 2010 is one of the highest tested group of students that we've ever had. They have been tested. She has a fair amount of test anxiety, which I'm certain many students do that have gone through school in her generation. Not everyone is a good test taker. Not everyone is good in math. And I worry she does not fit into the groups that they discussed, I can't remember, that would be taken out. She does not have an IEP. She's not moving to a new district. So she doesn't fit into that typical group that they would maybe take out. So I am concerned. I'm also guessing many of you who are sitting here respectfully may not have been good in math because you didn't go into a field where math was needed. You're public servants, which I hope my kids will look into going to. Everyone doesn't have to be good in math to be a successful member of our society. And I am afraid that we are telling them they do, and especially by saying things like, you met a minimum standard. What does that say to their self-esteem? So that's all that I'd like to say today. I'm just very concerned about this grad standard, and when I read in the newspaper that so many of our students are not looking at passing, it scares me. So I'm here for my child and all the kids that can't be here. Because let's remember, there may be urgency, but these are humans. These are humans. They are human. So I'm trying to put a human face on it. Thank you.
And thank you for doing that, Ms. Kay. Kent Pickell, and I'm going to ask the testifiers to be as concise as they can. I know they will. Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. At the outset, let me actually thank Senator Olson for the academic promotion here because she put PhD behind my name, and my doctorate is actually a work in progress at the university. But if any of you have any pull with Bob Brunix and could help me speed that up a little bit, I would be very grateful. My name is Kent Pickell, and I'm the director of the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota, a new organization that is working to increase both the number and the diversity of our students who graduate from high school with the knowledge, skills, and habits for success in higher education. I have been closely following the development of the grad assessment since my time as an administrator in the St. Paul Public Schools, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to share a few thoughts about the challenges that you, Commissioner Segrin, and other policymakers face at this moment. And let me say at the outset that I think this is a big, big moment. The decisions that you make about our state's graduation requirements in the coming months will have profound implications for the lives of thousands of students, their families, and the educators who work with them. And these are unavoidably tough decisions. On one hand, if we move forward with the grad tests as currently structured, we risk raising dropout rates and denying high school diplomas to hundreds, if not thousands, of students who have met all the other requirements for high school graduation. On the other hand, if we step back from setting high standards on the grad, we risk giving students the wildly incorrect message that they can be ready for life after high school without mastering at least moderately high-level skills in reading, writing, and mathematics. And so what should we, or more to the point, you, do? By way of suggesting a couple of answers to that question, let me give you a bit more background on high-stakes graduation testing in the United States. 23 states now require students to pass an exit exam to earn a high school diploma. By 2012, when three more states will implement such exams, approximately two-thirds of our nation's public high school students will be affected by high-stakes graduation tests. Those exams basically fall into three food groups. The first are minimum competency exams, like the basic standards test that our state is phasing out. The second type is a more comprehensive exam that, unlike a basic skills test, is designed to measure minimum competency on state standards in several key subjects and requires students to demonstrate mastery of a broader range of knowledge and skills than a basic skills test. That is the type of test that Minnesota is moving toward with the grad. The third food group, which Commissioner Segrin mentioned and Dr. Mattson mentioned, and also Representative Mariani, is called an end-of-course exam, which assesses mastery of the content of a specific high school course, such as Algebra 2, Biology, or World History. The exam is usually taken, as the name suggests, at the end of the high school class in question. While only two states used end-of-course exams as exit tests in 2002, four did last year, and by 2015, 14 states will have them in place. I mentioned the differences between these approaches to exit exams because after thinking about this for the last 5 years, my recommendation in response to Commissioner Segrin's call for a long-term, broader vision for assessment in our state is that Minnesota join the ranks of states that use end-of-course exams rather than minimum competency tests of state standards to determine eligibility for a high school diploma. This is obviously a longer discussion than we have time for here, but let me give a couple of reasons for this recommendation and then get to a suggestion for what we should do with the grad test during the years it would take us to move to an end-of-course system. I believe that the core purpose of any form of high-stakes graduation test should be to motivate and require students to master academic content that is essential for success after high school. For that to happen, both the students themselves and the educators who work with them need to understand the required content in clear and actionable ways. The exit exams need to be tests, in other words, that you can and must study for and work towards over time. In general, both basic skills and comprehensive minimum competency exit exams don't meet that criteria, especially the way we are structuring the grad test here in Minnesota, where it is an unknown subset of questions embedded somewhere on the larger MCA exam. In contrast, if a student knows that he or she must achieve a passing score on a state test that will be given at the end of Algebra 2 or another important class, there's a good chance that student will pay attention not only to that test in that class, but to critical classes that lead up to it, like Algebra 1 and Geometry. And if the student understands why that class is critical to his or her plans for life after high school, he or she will have an even more powerful reason to work hard and embrace the challenge. In addition to giving the student a clear curricular target to work towards, the end-of-course approach also gives educators and policymakers a way to bring coherence and accountability to classes that the state has mandated all students complete, as Minnesota has done with Algebra 1 and 2 and biology, and with a choice between physics or chemistry. Without a uniform way to measure what students are learning in those required courses, we won't have any way of knowing if the Algebra 2 listed on a student's transcript is really what the state means by Algebra 2. And that matters because we know from a large body of research that if a student doesn't master the real content of Algebra 2, his or her chances of succeeding in college are much, much lower. Commissioner Segrin, I know, as she alluded to in her remarks, is also interested in end-of-course exams as one potential option, and I'm honored that she's asked me and Dr. Larry Gray, who's the head of our math department at the university, to join Dirk and some colleagues from the Department of Education, school district leaders, and colleagues from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities next week in Washington, D.C., to look at the issue with a group of states that have started down that path or are seriously considering doing so. I believe that the next several years will be a good time for Minnesota to develop an end-of-course approach to high school exit exams, in part because we can learn from states that have already taken that leap and gone before us, and in part because we will be able to design that strategy to fit whatever approach to testing and accountability the federal government takes through the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. Unless and until the federal government gets out of the education business altogether, it makes no sense for Minnesota to be misaligned with national requirements. Sending confusing signals to schools and systems is the enemy of effective educational policy. But in the meantime, what should we do with the grad? My recommendation is to maintain the requirement and to take what former Commissioner of Education in Massachusetts, David Driscoll, has called the Goldilocks approach to setting the cut score on the 11th grade math test. Not too high, not too low. But should we deny diplomas to students who do not hit a single score on that test or any of the other two grad tests over the next several years? Based on some of the concerns that the parent just testified before me shared, that's an issue much on all of our minds. I believe we should not. I agree with Chester Finn, president of the former Fordham Foundation and former Assistant Secretary of Education under President Reagan, who has said that, quote, "I really do think that a kid shouldn't have his entire life blighted because he can't do well on a particular kind of test," end quote. But Finn also notes that, quote, "at the same time, you allow too many alternative paths and too many exemptions, and you dilute the meaning of having a graduation test." And so I recommend that we incorporate two or at most three additional measures into a statewide graduation formula that would make it possible for a student who has not passed one or more grad tests to earn a diploma based on success in other measurable areas. In Arizona, for example, students who fail one or more sections of their state exit test can augment their scores with points derived from course grades of C or better. The option is only open if they pass all of their required courses, retake the state test every time it is offered, and participate in any remediation programs that are offered by their high school in the subject area they failed. Here in Minnesota, I believe that the use of multiple measures along with the grad should be time-limited, with a predetermined sunset date of perhaps 3 years in order to ensure that we remain focused on working toward a more coherent and effective system. During that time, in addition to considering a transition to end-of-course exams and learning what comes after No Child Left Behind, we would also be able to evaluate how students actually perform on the grad tests once all three cut scores have been set and are known before students take the test. Perhaps we'll find that the grad is a surmountable hurdle for most of our students and that it serves our state well. But I don't know how we can figure that out until we've tried it for several years. I also don't believe, however, that we should hold individual students accountable for meeting a single standard until we are absolutely certain it's the right one. And so in sum, my recommendation is to transition to a system of end-of-course exams over the next 3 to 5 years, and in the meantime to add a limited number of additional measures to a state graduation formula that continues to include the grad. Let me conclude with two very brief final points. The first has to do with money. Research by the Center for Education Policy in Washington, D.C. concluded in 2004 that, quote, the cost of implementing a policy requiring high school exit exams ranges from $171 to $557 per student per year. And the price tag escalates sharply when states make efforts to increase pass rates, raise the cut score for adequate performance, or adopt a more challenging test, end quote. With Thursday's budget projection looming, I know I don't have to tell any of you to keep funding in mind, but it would be delusional not to at least mention it here. And finally, as someone who has been both a high school teacher and a district administrator, let me make a plea for stable policy and long-term thinking as you figure out how to address this very difficult issue. It greatly undermines the willingness of educators on the front lines to put themselves on the line for reform when they have the sense that the state isn't going to stay the course. And toward that end, it would be great if the decision you make on the grad tests were the beginning of a new era of bipartisan collaboration on educational policy in Minnesota. And on that optimistic and hopefully not delusional note, thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today.
Thank you very much, Ms. McCall. Those suggestions are definitely in the mix of potential remedies, and we appreciate your thoughtful suggestions. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really like your idea of kind of taking a lot of the pressure off of just judging a student solely on the basis of a test. Have you thought through what the process might be in terms of, let's say, a student is succeeding in other areas yet doesn't do well on the grad test? What process would be used then to kick in maybe your ideas about alternative evaluation? When would that happen? How long it would take? Who would judge that? What are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, it's a critical question. I will say that I worked very briefly, frankly, on the fly with Representative Slocum last year to talk about what was an appeals process. And a lot of folks around the state at the district level and the school level, where both of which places I've been, made very clear to me that that was a really bad idea for reasons that had to do with everything from legal challenges to just the fact that there's a cost benefit here. The time they spend administering this thing, they don't spend teaching and working with kids. So as far as I've thought through that question, and I think we could look at other states like Arizona to figure out what has worked there. As far as I've thought through that question, Representative, I think it would be a state standard. So the standard is common across the state that would be implemented at the district level. That's really how our graduation requirements work now. So districts would not be facing the challenge of deciding on the measures they would not be facing the challenge of deciding whether or not to waive the grad requirement or not. We'd have a clear standard for essentially an multiple measures assessment for students who don't pass one or more of the grad tests. That still is going to take time and effort to administer. But I would say to some of my colleagues who might have concern about that time, in the end, this is about the integrity of a high school diploma in Minnesota. And so you're awarding that diploma in your charter school or your district, and so ultimately you've got to be willing to stand behind it. So I think that this shouldn't be a painless process for schools and districts to administer, and it's not today. I also, we were talking about the basic standards test. In St. Paul, not only, of course, did we not grant a diploma if a kid didn't pass the BST, we didn't even let them walk in graduation. And so year after year, I would, at the district level, meet with the families and the teachers, many, by no means all of whom were English language learners, who had all their credits, who were close to the BST, and we made the decision not to even let them walk in the ceremony because the other kids who were their peers who had faced the same requirements and got over that bar risked looking over and saying, well, you know, why is he or she there? So these are very tough decisions that I think ultimately have to be made at the school and district level, but with very clear state criteria so we don't put those schools and districts in the place of needing to essentially make what is a state policy decision.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pickell. We need to go to the next group, and we will be revisiting the subject again at a subsequent meeting. Thank you. We are going to continue to hear additional suggestions, and there's a group from Edina Public Schools that have been representing other school districts as well. If I could ask all of them to approach, and as you synchronize your testimony, keep in mind that we are aware of the problem, that we are aware there's a sense of urgency, and let's focus on remedy. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Superintendent Rick Dressen from Edina Public Schools, and as you mentioned, we are Team Edina, but we're also representing a much larger group of members from the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, as well as our colleagues throughout the state. I will end my statements at that point and turn it over to other members of our team that are here to share their thoughts and concerns.
Superintendent, you're also representing AMSD on this as well.
Dr. Phil Core, Director of Research and Evaluation at Edina, and in keeping with the 101 focus today, I want to just briefly hit a couple of areas from the research literature that relate to issues around the grad. First of all, the standards for educational and psychological testing specify that, quote, determining whether the use of a test for making graduation decisions produces better overall education outcomes requires that the various intended benefits of test use be weighed against unintended negative consequences for individual students and different kinds of students, end quote. We believe that without major modifications, the graduation required assessment for diploma does not provide benefits that outweigh the potential negative consequences. In our comments today, we suggest a number of modifications, and my colleague Jenny Norlin Weaver will talk about those.
Excuse me, members, we do have an excellent handout, too, that summarizes their points, and thank you.
That we believe would go a long way toward making the grad meet the standard. Mr. Pickell talked about the Arizona situation. The National Research Council, an arm of the prestigious National Academy of Sciences, has indicated that, quote, there are alternative ways of making CIS decisions that do not rely on test scores alone. These include the use of compensatory models for making diploma decisions, the use of differentiated diplomas, and reliance on end-of-course examinations in making high school graduation decisions. We've heard about a number of those. The Arizona example is an example of a compensatory model, where a student can compensate for low test scores by some other mechanism, such as high grades or courses, as was true there. We maintain that elements of advance notice to families and students, adequate time for remediation and retesting, as well as the process of setting the standard for passage, are all at issue, particularly when it is yet unclear what the required passing score will be on the math component. These elements will have a disproportionate impact on certain population of Minnesota students, including those living in poverty, English language learners, students of color, and American Indian students. Speaking particularly to the math grad test, we find it contrary to best practice to believe that a student who has not reached a proficiency in mathematics after 11 years of instruction is able to become proficient in the short window of time between receiving test results and being allowed to retest. Indeed, the National Research Council has noted, quote, "We do not know how to best combine advance notice of high-stakes test requirements, remedial interventions, and opportunity to retake graduation test," end quote. We support the notion of accountability for student learning and for the systems charged with supporting student success. However, we believe the system must be a statewide effort, collectively concerned with the economic and social well-being associated with the achievement of a diploma. The legislature and Department of Education bear a heavy burden to support local schools and districts in this work. To that end, my colleague, Dr. Jenny Norland Weaver, will offer several possible solutions for consideration, noting that legislative remedy is critical given the timeline for the class of 2010.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to ascribe the authorship for these ideas to a number of West Metro teaching and learning directors. I think it's important to recognize that these are timely decisions that need to be made. If we could look at several opportunities, one might be to hold harmless the classes of 2010 and 2011 at a minimum, others to follow as necessary until a satisfactory resolution is apparent. One could reinstate the BST test as a Minnesota graduation requirement until resolution is reached. This would be consistent with research that suggests to plan a gap of several years between the introduction of new tests and the attainment of high stakes to individual student performance. We've heard some commentary about motivated data and motivated students. It will be very difficult to say to a group of 17-year-olds, this is a very important test. Do the very best you can. We can't tell you how well, but you should do the very best you can and expect them to feel very motivated about that statement. I agree with the commissioner completely that we need to be thoughtful, that we need to talk about common sense remedy, and we need to have an assessment process that is useful and helpful to those of us who have to deal with instructional dilemmas. A second idea would be to differentiate a notation on students' diplomas. We could make in that way a broader rate of passage at several levels. For example, we could talk about a basic, a proficient, an exemplary passage rate, and that might be one way in the interim to think about setting cut scores. We've talked about creating alternative pathways to demonstrate mathematics proficiency, including presentations of alternative evidence from an ACT, an SAT, an AP, a CLEP, an IB test of some sort. North Carolina has a situation very much like this, and I might encourage you to take a look at the work that they have done because they've created a number of options. Many of these alternatives have been used in other states. Washington State has three different ways that a person could find their way to graduation. I think we provided a handout with those three options for you. One idea is that they have a math test, or you can take two credits after grade 10 in math. So in essence, you're taking high school mathematics throughout your high school career, and also an annual assessment, speaking again to the end of course assessment idea. Consider that if a student has passed an associated course, the mathematics standards requirement has been met for that course, if they've passed Algebra 1, if they've passed Algebra 2, if they've passed Geometry. Washington uses what they call a comparison cohort model, in which case, if you've not passed the test, but you can find evidence that there are students who've taken the same courses you have, they've passed those courses, you've passed those courses, your grade point averages are similar, they've passed the test and you have not, now you can make a case that you should be granted your diploma. One might use four nationally recognized components of mathematics mastery. It comes out of the National Diploma Project to frame an alternative pathway. The end of course assessment is certainly one of the assessment processes that they use in referencing algebra, geometry, probability, statistics, and number sense. Again, as noted earlier, these last two solutions could be part of a compensatory model. Minnesota has posted, actually, on the Achieve website, a plan, an action plan, for a P16 partnership that was filed with Achieve in 2006. It's a much less punitive framework than we're experiencing today as we discuss this at the table. And it might we might elect to align with that framework more completely in the interim that we're going to try to buy. Also, authorizing the development of a local appeals process. I like the idea that we heard earlier in terms of thinking about what the state standard for that might be, that allowing then the local assessment process, the local appeals process to kick in would be useful for us as well. We thank you for the opportunity to share these ideas.
Thank you.
And my name is Peyton Robb, and I'm a school board member and parent. I'm not here, I guess, with the solutions, but more parent perspective. One thing that's very clear as I talk with parents in the district is parents don't know this is even coming down the pipeline. They don't know that there's this drastic of a change from the BST standard and focus and level of achievement to this high-stakes testing. So they're completely caught by surprise. Their eyes open wide when we start talking about it. And when we talk about we don't really have the details to even share with you, their eyes get wider because it's not been a transparent process. We don't know what that cut score is, as the other testifiers have talked about. It's really an issue to parents. You don't know what to do for your kid. Basically, you're going to be faced with this result at the end of their 11th grade year. Their senior year is likely to be trashed in large respect because of the remediation that will be required, because this is not just a one-year fix, as again, testifiers have talked about, that you can just, you know, have a six-week class and be ready to take this test. This has been a build-up, and maybe there's a failure to some extent with the education system. Maybe it's been with kids and kids' motivation. If you ever have adolescents, or I basically have a sophomore right now and a sophomore in college, motivating adolescent is a very challenging role as a parent. It's even more challenging, I think, as a school district. And I think that you have to keep that in mind. Piling on one more negative to kids that might not be doing that well in class, and those are the ones we're talking about, whether they have various handicaps, or they have they aren't motivated, or they aren't focused, whatever the issue is, those adolescents aren't motivated by one more negative. And it's just, if you think this is a motivating factor, I think you're going down the wrong direction.
Senator Saltzman has a question. Mr. Robb?
So,
yes. Well, this is a question to Mr. Robb. Mm-hmm. How is it that your parents aren't aware of this? As a school board member, is that your responsibility? I'm really struggling today with this because I also sit on our business committee, and I hear a lot from the business community about our workforce and where are we going to be. And I've also heard today a number of comments about you, as in the legislature. You made this decision. You have to decide the solution. We are citizen legislators. This is a problem that we have to bring together our business community, our school board members, because you do have local control. Legislators have to listen. But I'm really struggling because I feel like we're trying to say we really want high standards, but we really don't. When it comes down to really holding everyone accountable, and parents are a big part of this, and I feel for parents because I've been there with my kids, but we also have to talk about kids taking and parents taking their education in particularly these areas. So I'm just commenting that we all have to be responsible for this problem, and we all have to be responsible for the solution. So I hear this, but I'm really nervous about just telling kids that this test is not going to count this year. So those are my comments.
Mr. Ross.
Senator Wieger, Senator Saltzman, I agree that we do have to keep in mind what's best for our kids. As far as what's been communicated to parents and school board, I actually have spoken at numerous school board meetings. I've spoken at MSBA. I'm a member there. I'm also an AMSD member. And I've spoken there. A lot of school board members haven't heard about it. We've had one major article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the 15th of November, really lining up what some of the issues are. One of the problems of communicating to the parents and letting them know exactly what's going on is that it's so nebulous exactly what's going on. We had this test last spring that 34% of the kids passed, but that's not the test, maybe. I mean, it's this, you know, and there's, were any of those 15 questions part of those questions in that test? So is there a cut score or isn't there a cut score? How are we gauging this? So I have been communicating, I guess. I can speak personally on that. People, you know, I'm, and it is our responsibility. As far as the local control piece, I'm not sure where the local control piece is in this anymore. It seems like the legislatures put it in statute that took away our local control to grant diplomas, which I thought, as a school board member, was my duty. And based upon the way it's structured now, we could have a large percentage of our students that will not get a diploma, not based upon anything that the local school board had to do about it. So it's kind of, is there local control? I would argue that point.
For this panel, we have time for two more questions. Senator Torres-Ray, followed by Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For any of you, I would like to describe a system that is working for most South American countries, including the country that I come from, Colombia, and some European countries. In Colombia, children graduate regardless of their ability or regardless of their score that they get in a test, in a state test. Every child receives a diploma. In Europe, that is the same. Every child receives a diploma. So there are three components to measuring a kid's success at the end of the school. One is that a kid and a parent, a family, receives these scores that we receive as parents receive in math, science, and they average that. And based on that, they receive a diploma. 99 out of 100 kids receive a diploma. And then they also take a test. And that is a test that universities review, that score. So kids are measured by three standards: receiving a diploma, receiving a good score on exams, course exams that start in eighth grade, and then the equivalent of a test that you will call an MCA test. So it is not putting all in one basket, which is this test, which a parent alluded to. So a kid like your kid, and probably my kid, that don't like a lot of math, they will graduate, and they will receive high scores in other courses, and they may not receive a good score in math MCAs, but they will receive other scores that on average make that student eligible for applying to many colleges or technical colleges. I would like to ask you, what is wrong with that system? Why don't we have it in a country where we have so much technology, so many resources? Why is that we put all of it, everything, the success or the failure of one kid in one test? Why is that we cannot do that in this country and in this state?
We'll ask anyone, but it's the legislature that required it. So
no, but it is based on a recommendation, because I believe that Senator Salzman is correct. For the commissioner and for all of you to come to say to us, it is you. No, we make decisions based on expert recommendations. Mm-hmm. We review other states, and we also review the systems from all over the world, yes, because we can no longer accept just North Carolina and Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. We have to look at Germany,
Colombia,
and China, yep, and India. So they do have systems that work.
Okay. Brief response from India.
Yeah, Senator Torres-Ray, Mr. Chair. I think that is the power of what we're here today about. This is a very early session. We recognize we have a challenge. Edina is offering our services. When I say Team Edina, we're here to be problem solvers with you. We recognize as a community that we have a responsibility to the state, to our students, and we're here to do that. So the ideas we offer, we know that we want to continue to move forward. We were here the first day at the hearing, the first day of school, expressing our concern. We're here bringing some ideas. We know there are some very good ideas generated here today. We will continue to be with you on that march as we look at options like that. And I think the state is going to be in a better place because we're stuck right now, because we're going much deeper into looking at what's really valued and what we really want. And I think we'll continue to surface better ideas and make it good for all kids long term.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, the averaging approach would be an example of a compensatory model that we mentioned, and I believe there are several states that are using some sort of average compensatory model so that a high score in reading, for example, might offset a lower score in mathematics.
Okay. Representative Verdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been talking a lot or listening a lot today about high school scores and high school testing. I just want to just offer some comments that, as I understand it, through about fourth grade, Minnesota students are among the world leaders in test scores. And then starting about in fifth grade, a gap begins to show up that grows and grows until, even though Minnesota seniors and they graduate are still among the leaders in this nation, we are much behind in the rest of the world. And so what I'm saying is that I want to emphasize those middle school years. What are we doing in fifth grade, in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade? And perhaps if we can fix what's happening there, we won't be spending time talking about how to pass students who didn't learn.
Senator Weiger, Representative Verdahl. It's difficult to tell because Minnesota did not do what is technically known as vertically moderate their standards so that you've got an even progression of standards up through the grades. You're probably the best thing we can do is look at a report from the Fordham Foundation where they compared for states that have a lot of districts using the measures of academic progress test. They compared what a percentile rank on that test equates to in a passing score. And particularly in mathematics in Minnesota, there's a dramatic difference as you look at what is the national percentile rank that corresponds to a grade 4 pass rate on the MCA and a grade 8 pass rate on the MCA. So the test gets much more difficult as you go up through the grades.
I want to thank the delegation from Edina. I believe your school motto is, or district, we care, we share, we something, and we dare, we care, we share. And that's certainly represented here today, so thank you.
Thank you.
If I could ask Charlie Kite and Jim Bartholomew to both approach, and Charlie's organization, for MASA, we have a handout with a summary of their thoughts. And then we'll hear from Jim Bartholomew.
Senator Weiger, members of both Senate and House Education Committees, let me introduce myself. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And I think for this conversation, I would also just like to point out that I've served also as a science and math teacher. I've served as a high school principal, and I've served as a superintendent. So I've spent some time inside of schools sorting out these kind of issues for many, many years. I'd like to make three points quickly and then present to you another alternative approach that you might want to at least consider. And on the handout that you have, I've hit these first three points. I just want to remind us all that we work under the No Child Left Behind Act of the federal government. It is widely recognized at this point that act, while it has pushed schools and students towards greater academic proficiency, also has been too punitive in its approach to the way that it has carried out its business. I also would make the argument that Minnesota has, at the state level, for a variety of well-intentioned reasons, has also taken a more punitive approach to the way they view schools and their success than many other states in the nation. We have many times when I get together with my colleagues from across the country, they kind of roll their eyes, first of all, recognizing that Minnesota has a very good education system and don't quite understand why so many of our schools are identified for one reason or another as not doing well. Second point I would like to make is that it is important that we keep moving forward in terms of raising the level of math competency. There's been a lot of effort put in so far. We have spent a lot of time inside of our schools training elementary teachers to teach math better. We are moving the bar up in our middle schools and our high schools. So there's a lot of effort going. public education is like a great big ship, and it doesn't turn easily. And we've started to kind of move it in a better direction on math. So we just want to remind us all that we don't want to completely shift the direction and lose the momentum. That's happened too many times in our past and shouldn't happen again. Third point I'd like to make is that the current plan right now has a number of negative consequences to it. And I think Ken Pickell presented this quite well, but I'd like to just quantify it a little bit. Based on our analysis and analysis of other folks, if you even set the level of on the grad test at not full proficiency, but close to full proficiency, a little bit below that, and even though you are going to induce the students to take it seriously and you're going to retest them and try to help them pass, you're only going to get about 75% of the students passing that test. That means if you look at the broader number of students, the kids that are seniors in high schools, you could make an argument that 10,000 students wouldn't graduate. But the reality is that some of those students won't graduate for other reasons as well. But you could attribute directly to the failure to pass this math test to the non-graduation of somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000 to 5,000 students. That's an awful lot of kids to punish if they can't pass this test. There also was some talk about how might you do an appeal or a waiver. Frankly, the suggestion of Ken Pickell of saying the state should sort of figure this out ahead of time makes good sense to us if that's the way that you want to go. If you leave it up to the school districts, you're going to have a number of problems. First of all, you're going to have a lot of schools in a bureaucratic mess of what should we do or not, what should we not do. You're also going to have to make decisions in 350 different districts about which kids graduate and which don't. And that's going to be all over the place. Or you're going to have some districts that are going to say, well, we've got a solution to this. As long as the kids meet the other requirements, then they graduate. And then you have to beg the question, why would you give the math test in the first place? So the waiver thing has all kinds of problems in it. Possibly trying to identify it well from the state level would be an alternative. But even that's going to be rife with some problems. So let us just come to suggesting an alternative solution. And this may not be the long-term solution. There might be other long-term solutions, but it is at least a way to move away from the punitive approach and try to move us onto a more of a positive track. Consider rewarding the students and the schools for doing well. I've raised children, and now I'm kind of watching on the sidelines as we're raising grandchildren in our family, and you know what? Rewarding them does work better than punishing them, by and large. Not always, but by and large. First of all, what you could do is you could provide a math endorsement for those students passing the math grad test. You could give that endorsement to them both on their transcript and even possibly on their diploma, so that places that they go after graduation, colleges, technical colleges, or into the workforce, would have some evidence that they're competent in math. And if you put the endorsement on their diploma, they and their parents could see it as well. You could even consider a second higher endorsement level that shows that the student was proficient on the whole greater 11th grade math test. And if you had time to figure out how to do this, you could even say that proficiency on that math test, the bigger test, also could be equated to college readiness so that the students could move right on in that direction. You could look for some additional inducements that you wanted to give the student because they are doing well. You could recognize those schools that are successful in getting large number of students to pass the math proficiency test, be it the grad test or the greater test. So again, you're trying to encourage the schools instead of punishing them. One of the advantages of this idea is that you would not have to have a time delay in putting this in place. You could actually put this in place for the 2010 graduates because you don't have to substantially change the test. You don't have to change the direction. You move to a positive approach versus a punitive approach. And there's one last thing. You wouldn't have to artificially set the cut score on the grad test artificially low. If you analyze how many students aren't going to graduate, and you start trying to figure out where to set the cut score, you keep wanting to ratchet it down lower and lower and lower so not as many kids are affected. This way you could set the grad score at a reasonable level and then create it as a reward for students. So that's another alternative way of moving forward, and I would be glad to answer any questions you might have on this or the broader subject.
Thank you, Dr. Kite. Questions at this point? Gaven, I know you'll still be here. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And there's been a lot said today, and would love to respond to much of it, and I guess I'll be happy being last on the agenda for this topic. Just to try to bring us back a little bit to how we got to this policy. As was mentioned earlier numerous times, it's critically important that high school graduates who earn a diploma have the knowledge and skills they need to be successful. Bottom line. Because of this, we've supported a passing score on the grad that is consistent with the meet standards or proficient score on the MCA2s. And just as a little explanation about that, in talking about high school graduation requirements, it's important to remember what meet standards means and who helped shape that definition. As you know, the MCA2s and the grad are based on our state's academic standards for students in reading, writing, and math. By and large, these standards have been developed by educators, both K-12 and higher ed. And these standards have served as a description of the skills and knowledge students should have on a grade-by-grade basis. Educators have also been heavily involved in the development of the MCA2s and the grad, which again are based on our standards. Finally, Minnesota educators have played the leading role in recommending what the various cut scores should be on the MCA2 and the grad. And it's through this score-setting process that educators recommend the level students should perform at to be achieving at grade level or to be meeting standard. In short, pardon me, I already got that one. Minnesota educators have shaped our standards, the MCA2s and the grad, and the respective cut scores. As a result, the definition of proficient or meets standards is that students are performing at grade level. Plain and simple, if you boil it all down, proficiency means performing at grade level. For these reasons, we'd suggest we're doing students more harm than good if we grant them a diploma when they aren't able to perform at the high school level. Our challenge, really, is to understand the barriers. Why can't our students achieve at grade level? And make the needed changes so all students can succeed. Again, there's been a lot talked about today that we'd love to participate in the conversation and do everything we can to come to a good resolution. But I think the key for us, and there are a lot of thorny issues, but the key is those students, when they earn a high school diploma, they need to be as well prepared as possible, all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Questions of the witnesses? Yes, Representative Ward.
A question, just a comment relating to Mr. Kite's suggestion about rewarding, and I think that's a good suggestion. One of the things that most students, most children, most young people, and this goes back to the parents' comment as well, you know, at 16 years old, most of our kids just can't wait to get that little card, that little driver's license, how they get, and they make sure, that's a difficult test that they must take. Most of us in here have passed as well. And I think that if we keep that in mind, you know, we have a system within the driver's license system that a high percent of our kids are successful at doing. And it's through individualized kind of mechanisms as well, oftentimes, for the kids that have difficulty. One of the things that I read in here was, does it have to be just one test score? Can it be a cut score for a college path? Can it be a cut score for a technical path? Can it be a cut score for a working path? I think that's wise. And then maybe we need to look at and I don't say this with humor. I think I say this looking at our whole system and saying, Ken Pickell, Mr. Pickell, I thought your presentation, if he's still here, was excellent with a number of great suggestions, including, does our coursework apply towards allowing maybe some help with those cut scores as well. I think that's an excellent suggestion. And maybe we don't give a driver's license anymore until they pass the grad test as well. And I think I know that that's been legislation in the future as well. But I think it is something that something for us to look at as well. So I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Ward. Members, we are almost out of time here, but on the remaining part of the agenda, I'm going to ask in just a bit for the testifiers to just give a two-minute or less highlight of what they're talking about. We do have a summary already, but just to set the stage on that subject, so if those persons can be ready. But on this subject, an announcement. Based on the testimony and what clearly has made a case for action, we've talked to Commissioner Segrin, Representative Mari and I, Mariani and myself, during the hearing, and we're going to look at forming a special task force that would have three senators, three reps. It'll be bipartisan, and there will be some other stakeholders, some of them right here. And the purpose will be to develop recommendations addressing this subject, recognizing the sense of urgency. I would expect that we would have a hearing progress of those recommendations the first week of January when we meet, and I expect the task force will meet by mid-December. So that is just breaking information, but we are going to resolve this. So thank you to the testifiers.
Thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make a comment, maybe as your other people are coming up.
Yes. I believe, Mr. Bartholomew, you're still up there. But if the other testifiers could please approach, members, we do have a handout for this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that's good news that there's a task force being pulled together on this. Maybe something to consider as that task force moves forward. Mr. Peckle did a good job of reminding us of the budget situation that we are in. So I think any work going forward should be framed very clearly within those parameters, because it's very easy to sit and talk policy. It's a whole other matter to discuss implementation. But something that Dr. Dressen said, what do we really want? And maybe I missed that conversation in 2005. But what we really want is we want our Minnesota students to graduate. Because why? Because we know that a strong workforce is the key to our economic success, bottom line. So I would just encourage us, as we are having the policy discussion, and because our resources are so grossly limited, and I saw the commissioner nod affirmatively on this, I would hope that we would focus on what we really, really want.
Thank you, Senator Lynch, and that's our challenge, and we'll be back, and we'll invite your respective input during that process. Next, and we'll let you go in whatever order. And I had put this on the agenda because there's a lot of groups that have been talking about different accountability proposals. We are going to have a work group addressing that, chaired by Senator Rummel, and I believe this is going to be done collaboratively, too, with the House. But if testifiers could just highlight the subject, and obviously there's more to come.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Angie Eilers. I'm the Research and Policy Director at Growth and Justice, and I want to segue a little bit with what Senator Lynch has said and about our topic today. We will learn in a few days that our state is facing a large deficit, and I only raise that because I think we are all mindful that every expenditure or allocation will need to be done with care and to the greatest effect. Not only do we want, what do we want, but we got to ask the question, what works? I believe in prevention efforts ultimately because I think they're cheaper and they're better for all of us in the long run. So with regard to the grad test and other tests and accountability in general, it seems to me that Minnesota already spends quite a bit on testing at several levels. And I just learned today that we have national technical experts on retainer at the Department of Education, and I think that's great. But one question I think about as a researcher is, how are these various tests that we're spending money on aligned? So, for example, how would the grad exam, which is a graduation exam, be aligned with college admission exams like the ACT? And earlier in the student's years, the Plan and Explore, which is the 8th grade and 10th grade equivalent of the ACT, how are those tests aligned with MCA2s and other things? So of all the testing that we invest in, much of it providing lagging indicators, by the way, and not leading indicators, what don't we know about students by now? One suggestion I have is to call for a kind of an audit of all the kinds of state testing that's going on to learn of the utility and the effects and the effectiveness of these tests. If we know that by the end of 11th grade that thousands of students will not pass, and if at the same time students are tested in the 3rd grade, the 4th grade, the 5th grade, I think they're tested in just about every grade after the 3rd grade, but a few, and that they're performing below a proficiency level during all those years, and that's going to correlate with their likelihood of not passing 10th and 11th grade tests and grad exams, then what are we doing to identify early on what they don't know? And when we know what they don't know, what are we doing about that? And can we use some of the resources that we're allocating currently in the smartest, most differentiated, effective way to identify those particular cohorts of students, whoever they are and for whatever topic, and get them back on track at a proficiency level early on so that they're successful in building on their success? Gaps only widen over time. It's harder and harder to narrow them over time. My second suggestion is develop a type of screen or a set of criteria to determine what works at what point for various cohorts of kids and ultimately at what cost. I don't know if we ask ourselves that question enough, but we do make allocation decisions that are not as aligned as they could be, and I think in the long run it would be more coherent and cost effective in the long run. To that end, Growth and Justice has spent 2 years developing smart investments in Minnesota students' proposal that has done just that. We've looked at the kinds of benchmarks that we've already determined, ready by K, reading by the 3rd grade, doing math, algebra at the 8th grade, rigorous coursework in high schools, and we've tried to determine from the available data where the kids are, what numbers of kids are off track. We've identified that there are thousands of kids not ready for K, not reading by the 3rd grade. Subsequently, we identified those proven effective interventions that are designed and have shown to get these kids back on track. And then ultimately, we figured out how much that will cost, the cost per student times the number of students. And then we ran it through one tougher filter, which was, is this as cost effective as it could be? There are a lot of programs that are effective. They're not always cost effective, but given our challenging economic times, it's important that we identify those that are going to give us a return on every Minnesota dollar that we spend. So we've identified those things from birth to college, and we think we're forwarding a reasonable and mindful proposal of what to do for our kids well before the 11th grade test and well before they finish high school. Invest in them early, invest in them well, invest in them smartly, and I think we'll get a great return on our dollar. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Eilers.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Scott Kronquist, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I'll just quickly go through, I'll work from the handout that you have in your packet and outline the four key elements that we've identified as part of our legislative priorities for this session. Number one, you'll see, is enact a new Minnesota miracle. That's referring, of course, to the legislation that was introduced late last session. Senator Bonhoff and Representative Greiland were the chief authors, but many of you have had a lot to do with input and working on that over the years. The reality is that that is intricately aligned with the policy you're talking about today. If we don't have a situation where the policy required, the expectation or outcomes required, are aligned with our funding system, we're going to have results that don't meet the expectation. We think that legislation will help us move in that direction. Enhance teacher quality. We know we have outstanding teaching force in Minnesota, but we have to continue to make progress to make sure that our teacher preparation programs, our professional development models are all continue to be in alignment with the increasing expectations that have been established at both the federal and state levels. Number three, intensify efforts to help all students succeed. Here again, we're talking about what you've been talking about today. How do we make sure that all students are going to be able to pass that bar? And it really is intertwined nicely with the Enact a New Minnesota Miracle. And then number four is an issue that we have been working on with Senator Rummel and Representative Mariani and others. And we think, again, today's hearing provided just that much more evidence of the need for this. We're calling for the creation of a state center or a commission of educational leadership and research. What we really need is a place for you, for our state policymakers, to turn to when issues like this arise, that an entity that would be able to examine best practices from across the country, pull in research from across the country and the world for that matter. So when you have major policy decisions to make, you have a ready place to go to gather data, gather research, and get the answers you need to these important questions. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, because I know you're on a tight timeline.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mary Ciccone, Parents United for Public Schools. In 1997, the state school board in Minnesota was abolished. That makes Minnesota the only state in the union that has neither a state school board nor an elected commissioner, the only state in the union. Now, we're not here to advocate for a state school board, but we are talking about that as a surrogate because most people believe that there is an entity that actually provides, I believe Mr. Pickell used the word, stable policy and long-term thinking. So what we are here advocating for is this entity that would help you provide research so that the leadership here can know what the education trends are that are emerging, that will be able to provide for you the most cost-effective initiatives that you could put forward, and that evaluation that would help taxpayers understand the efficiency and the efficacy of our schools. That's what we believe is missing. It's a vacuum at this point. We also need greater consistency so that it doesn't matter who is sitting in the State House. Our kids go to school from E through 16, not every 4 years. We can't be throwing one thing out and beginning something else. In that kind of fits and starts, I believe that's the enemy of effective policy. In a time when every dollar counts, and we believe in the Minnesota miracle, we believe that schools need more money, but we also believe that we have to prove to our public how every one of those dollars is being spent to increase student achievement, and that's what we believe we do not have, and we believe an entity needs to be formed in order to help the public understand that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Coney. Mr. Bartholomew, and I believe Mr. Wadle, too, is going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, I'm Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Be quick. I'd like to highlight two efforts. One is specific, and the other we expect to finalize by early January. The first specific effort is a bit of a unresolved from last session, but we would like to help support the development of a consensus for a student academic growth model that has been developed by the Department of Education over the interim. The department's proposed model meets our primary criteria in that it shows student academic growth relative to the state standards. As a result, the inclusion of a student academic growth data will provide additional and consistent information for the public on the state's website about our students and schools' progress. Our second effort will be to work with you on implementing the recommendations coming from a joint project we've entered into with the Itasca Project and McKinsey & Company. The overall goal of this project is to help ensure Minnesota's K-12 students are performing amongst the best in the world. As a result, the project has had three phases. The first phase was to identify the top-performing K-12 systems in the world and the factors they share that contribute to their success. The second phase was to compare Minnesota's K-12 system to the top-performing systems and identify those areas or factors where we match up well and where there are gaps. And finally, the third phase is based on that comparison and gap analysis, identify the 3 to 5 key areas where we can make changes to better align our K-12 system with the top-performing systems in the world. One of the keys to this project is it takes an extensive look at the research on practices and strategies used in top-performing schools and systems and directly links the key changes that will align our system to those successful practices. There are a lot of reports out there about what works, but often these reports don't take that next critical step. recommending specific actions. If Senator Wieger would be willing and the committee, we'd very much like to share our joint project's findings and recommendations with you as soon as they are complete. We're hoping around the first of the year. And then also having a consensus in support of the department's student academic growth model on the state's website would be a significant step forward as well. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Wadle.
Good morning, Senator Wieger, members of the committee. Bob Wadle from Education Evolving. Thanks for the opportunity to visit with you this morning. Just trying to summarize some of the comments that I'd like to make, but I'm going to spare you the 30-minute monologue. A couple of things. One is obviously in an accountability system, and I'm not sure if any of you were sitting around that table. Well, Senator Olson was 10 years ago when we discussed this very issue. The key things, of course, are quite obvious. Just what is it that we want our students to learn? I think Senator Lynch, maybe you articulated that, or Senator Lane. Just what is it that we want from a high school graduate? And in the area of mathematics, that's what you're discussing. Those are very, very important and quite frankly, difficult decisions. But they are decisions which must clearly be articulated. But they may well have some twists to them that some of which have been discussed this morning that I'd like to expand a little bit on. But the key thing is to define what is it that we are expecting from our students, from our system, and over what period of time, so that we move away from this one point in time snapshot, which then has significant implications on the lives of children and over their career. So it needs to be, what do we want from kids over what period of time? And then second, based on varying ways to demonstrate that the students have in fact met these particular requirements or standards that we have set for them. So what do we want from them over what period of time, and then what variety of ways can students use to demonstrate their competence? But so that's more on the individual student level. Then on the systemic levels, or on the system levels, how do we explain how 800,000 students are doing? I think that's where we have to be very, very careful, because we're frequently labeling sites as failing sites when they are in fact not failing at all. And that's where I think Mr. Bartholomew's comments about looking at growth models are so, so crucial. And we can show any number of sites that are on the failing list that are in fact model sites. And so one of the things that we need to be looking at differently is, for example, the student demographic of race. We used to know what Caucasian was. We don't anymore. Is Caucasian the Russian immigrant, the immigrants from Eastern Europe, or the kids that have been here from families of 5, 6, 10, 15 generations? They're all labeled Caucasian. Who is black? Is that the kid from Somalia? Is that the kid from West Africa? Some of the kids that are Arab, that there isn't a category for, or India? Or are they the kids that have, from families that have been here for 10, 12 generations? They're all black under our demographic. What does it mean when we say kids of color are doing better in X schools than in Y schools? Unless we match that with other characteristics such as, do they speak English? We won't know what race means. How long have they been in our system? 1 year, 6 months, 12 years? That has something to do with whether or not a site has had the opportunity to teach them. But we don't really look at that. And so I think tomorrow you're going to be, or some of you are going to be hearing from some reports that are looking at one point in time and drawing conclusions about how children of color are doing, and we don't know much about those children of color or how long they have been in those schools, et cetera. So our system reporting needs to be growth over time and then also value added as well. Stephen Roddenbush, who is probably...
We need to sum up.
I'm just coming to the conclusion. Roddenbush from the University of Michigan, probably considered the leading education expert on growth and value added, emphasizes that high-stakes decisions based on school mean proficiency are scientifically indefensible. Let's make sure we don't follow those kinds of models, Mr. Chairman. I'm confident with the leadership that we have in Minnesota, we can get around that.
Well, thank each of you for your excellent comments, for the reports that you've been working on. There's some emerging reports as well that you referred to, and I mentioned Senator Rummel's going to be heading up a work group that's going to process these recommendations, which will be done collaboratively with the House. That's our intent. And also, I want to mention tomorrow, or Wednesday is the charter school, Tuesday tomorrow. And Senator Saltzman, Representative Slocum, thank you for your efforts on that. And obviously, there's been a lot of attention on this important subject. So we'll look forward to the recommendations coming forward from that group as well. Permanent School Advisory Fund, they're going to be meeting as well this week as newly constituted through the legislation that Senator Lynch and Representative Dietrich and others have worked on. So, and that's on Wednesday. In terms of the legislative priorities, I know each caucus is working on those. And for members in our committee that have submitted feedback, that's all being processed right now. And we hope to have that work plan in the next 2-3 weeks following additional caucus input. Thank you very much to our testifiers and others for being here. This committee is adjourned.
Yes, I'd love to be on your tip-tops. Yes.